The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined by Dre Oldenburg and Nathan Glidewell. Now, still with Triple A. The first story we have today is LSU discovered the university accidentally overpaid the Tigers head football coach Brian Kelly by $1 million during the first year of his contract. They have since moved to correct the error. Guys, how do you even do that?
I don't even know. That was such a weird situation when it came out. They overpaid him because of the duplicate payments that they made to both Kelly's or to Brian Kelly's LLC and him directly. It's just an odd situation. I don't even know how you make that mistake.
I wish I got paid an extra $1 million. I mean, that'd be pretty nice. Yeah, but for the university to make that mistake is just silly. I mean, obviously it's fake, so it's not like that big of a deal, but you know, $1 million is a lot of money there.
Yeah, someone's definitely in some big trouble after that. All right, the second story we have today is the Carolina Panthers have hired former Indianapolis Colts head coach Frank Reich to be the team's next head coach. Do you think the Panthers made the right choice in hiring Reich over Steve Wilks?
I think this is such a lateral hire when it comes to hiring a head coach to rebuild a team like Carolina, because this Carolina roster is not rebuilt yet. They don't have the positions in place right now. They need a rebuilding effort, not a new coaching effort. Obviously, Matt Rhule was a problem for this Carolina franchise. And now you go out and hire Frank Reich, who is a solid coach and just, you know, did not have a very good year with Indianapolis at the beginning of this year. But I think it's so, so lateral. And we saw the success that Steve Wilks had at the end of the year compared to the success that Matt Rhule had, or quote unquote success, I'll say. But it's an interesting hire, I think. It very easily could work out. I think Frank Reich's a good coach, but it's lateral.
Yeah, all I'm going to say is it's the three R's. It's reduce, reuse, and recycle. That's all the NFL does. That's all the Panthers have done. And now picking up Frank Reich after being fired from the Indianapolis head coaching job, it's just one of those things where they had better options. I think Steve Wilks was the better option, and yeah, they chose to be mediocre. And if that's what the Panthers want, then go ahead, because you're going to end up getting seasons like Matt Rhule had.
Yeah, I think I'm with majority here thinking that Steve Wilks should have got this job. But I do understand the reason they're going with Frank Reich. They never had an offensive-minded coach in the history of that franchise. They had John Fox, Rivera, and then Matt Rhule. None of those guys have really worked out. I mean, Rivera made the Super Bowl, obviously didn't win it. And I think John Fox did as well, but still no win there. But Reich, he was kind of dealt a bad hand in Indy. You know, he never had a steady quarterback there. Every year was a different one. Not really sure how it's going to work out in Carolina, considering they don't have a starter as of right now. I mean, you have Sam Darnold, but he's a free agent. It's going to be really interesting to see how they handle that position and what Frank Reich develops doing that. I would like to see Wilks return as a DC if Reich really wants it.
Yeah, I think that's that'd be a great opportunity for Wilks to come back. But after some of the hearing some of the things that happened during the end of that coaching search, I don't know how likely that is due to his interest in coming back and playing for Carolina or coaching for Carolina.
Yeah. Right. As a Panthers fan, do you want to see Sam Darnold return as a starting quarterback, or do you want to go get one in the draft?
I think it all depends on who the other eight teams in front of you pick in the draft and what kind of situations you're in at that nine position. When Matt Rhule was the head coach, we all thought that Carolina would have a much higher position in the draft, but due to the success that Steve Wilks had as the interim head coach, Carolina was able to win some games and had a chance to get into the playoffs. But at that nine position, I think you only take one of the two top quarterbacks if they fall. And it's very unlikely that they fall, especially with teams wanting to trade above somebody like Carolina that are in the, you know, mid teens area that need a quarterback. But if Bryce Young or CJ Stroud is there, obviously I think that's a no brainer, but if not, I think you run with Sam Darnold and you try and build in free agency, even though you're over the salary cap right now.
So you wouldn't go after a guy like Will Levis?
No.
Please, no.
Please, not at all.
Yeah. I think Anthony Richardson might be a good fit, but I don't think he's worth the highest pick the Panthers have right now. I think they have a better option of like trading it down and maybe picking Anthony Richardson later in the round, or waiting till later in the draft, like day three, and picking somebody like Tanner McKee from Stanford to just like come in and maybe work his way up into starter position. All right, the third story we have today, a few NFL teams have hired replacements for their NFL coordinator positions. The New York Jets have hired former Denver Broncos head coach Nathaniel Hackett to be their offensive coordinator. The Atlanta Falcons have hired New Orleans Saints co-defensive coordinator and defensive line coach Ryan Nielsen to be a defensive coordinator. The Miami Dolphins have hired former Denver Broncos head coach Vic Fangio to be their defensive coordinator. The Los Angeles Chargers have hired former Dallas Cowboys offensive coordinator Kellen Moore to be the offensive coordinator. And then the New England Patriots have hired Alabama offensive coordinator Bill O'Brien to be their offensive coordinator. What do y'all think of these hires, and do any of them stick out to y'all?
I'm going to say one that sticks out to me, but it doesn't stick out to me as much as the one that I know Nathan's going to want to talk about. So I'm going to go with this one. I think that Kellen Moore to the Chargers after 24 hours after being fired by Dallas, he is hired by Los Angeles to be the Chargers' new OC and come in and try and make Justin Herbert the quarterback that we've seen that Justin Herbert has shown flashes and potential to be. And I think that's a weird hire. I think there are better options for a guy like Justin Herbert and that offense who has playmakers. Herbert has playmakers around him, but I think that was an interesting one. That's one I'm really going to keep my eye on this upcoming season and even in the off season, just watching the Chargers. They've got playmakers on offense, especially if they stay healthy. They're a good football team. But what is this Kellen Moore addition going to mean?
Yeah, before I get to probably the biggest one that I'm going to be on, I want to go ahead and talk about Ryan Nielsen going to the Falcons. You know, it's a division rivalry there with the Saints and Falcons. And Ryan Nielsen's been a great defensive line coach. You think about some of the personnel he's had over the couple years with New Orleans and how well how dominant Cam Jordan had been. So I definitely think that's a huge pickup for the Falcons to improve their defense, which is badly needed. Now, moving on to the Patriots picking up Bill O'Brien after getting rid of Matt Patricia, I really don't know. As an Alabama fan, you know, you see what Bill O'Brien has done as a play caller, and you really question some of the things he did. And obviously, I wanted him out. But to go to the Patriots, to take over that offense where they have a poor wide receiver core, Mac Jones has no one to throw to. They really just have the running game to rely on. And Bill O'Brien consistently proves that he's not really good with the running game. So that's probably the biggest worry if you're a Patriots fan. Also, the fact that Bill O'Brien is kind of – yeah, his offense isn't really fit around a quarterback like Mac Jones. It's, you think about what he did with Bryce Young. He wants to be able to do these plays where he's rolling out of the pocket and stuff like that. And Mac is just not that versatile.
Yeah, just touch on the two guys who didn't mention. Nathaniel Hackett to the Jets. I don't really understand that move. He didn't really do well as the play caller in Denver. He even had to give up the play calling duties because his offense was so bad. When he was actually having success with the Packers, he wasn't even calling the plays for Aaron Rodgers. It just seems like the Jets are just trying to use Nathaniel Hackett to lure Aaron Rodgers to request a trade to New York. I just don't understand that move at all. I think it may cost Robert Saleh his job for the Jets. And then Vic Fangio with the Dolphins, I think that's one of the best moves so far for a coordinator. He's really one of the best defensive minds in the league right now. The defense this year for the Dolphins was probably the worst I've ever seen. And I really think with Vic Fangio, it's going to take a big step forward next year. And if Tua is back healthy, I think his team can make a Super Bowl run. Just to touch back on Bill O'Brien, Nathan, who would you like to see replace him at Alabama?
Yeah, it's really crazy. I think
Brian Harsin.
No, Greg. Please do not. I think for me, I'd like to see Joe Brady. I like what he did with his time at LSU. I know he didn't have success at the Patriots. I mean, Patriots, Panthers, but, you know, that really wasn't all on him. You like to see another guy like Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen's a great offensive-minded guy that I'd like to see return to the SEC. I think he would do a great job. Obviously, Nick Saban and him have a good relationship. But either one of those two guys, I'd be fine with.
Ray, what about you being an outsider?
I think both the two that Nathan just named are very interesting options. Two kind of different play style and offensive style guys. You know, Joe Brady, when he had major success at LSU, he was the passing game coordinator. And that's what college football is kind of turning to nowadays. But Alabama next year, losing Bryce Young, is going to have a new quarterback, whether that be Jalen Milroe, whether it be Ty Simpson, whether it be, you know, somebody else. We don't know who that is going to be. And I think Joe Brady is the perfect guy for that. But also, you just mentioned Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen is a guy that, I mean, obviously had some interesting times at Florida. But if you look back at his Mississippi State days, he had some really good quarterbacks. I mean, Dak Prescott and Nick Fitzgerald, who's I don't think was a great quarterback, but really excelled in the Dan Mullen offense. So I think both of those two are some great names.
Yeah, there's another guy, Brian Johnson, the Philadelphia Eagles QB coach, with Jalen Milroe in that QB room, and him and Jalen Hurts kind of having the same kind of play style. I think Brian Johnson's a good fit there if they want to roll with Milroe next season. And also, if Saban wants to keep it in house, I don't think he should. He's probably bringing in another mind not in that university right now. Hallman Wiggins, the wide receiver coach, is also a good option there. He was the coach for Devonta Smith's Heisman Trophy winning season. All right, Gray, what we got for this disappointing week in college basketball?
Yeah, just like Alex just mentioned, a very disappointing week for the two Alabama schools. Let's start with Alabama. Got a pretty decent SEC win against Mississippi State, a team that they kind of completely shut off in Starkville a few weeks ago. Mississippi State was ahead pretty much for 30 minutes of this game. Then Alabama took over in the final 10 and was able to win by 66-63. Some interesting performances from this game. Brandon Miller only gets 9 shots and has 13 points. Javon Quinterly gets 14 points off the bench. We've been, you know, begging him to, you know, give something off the bench for Alabama. And then for Mississippi State, Tolu Smith continues to show he's one of the best four men in this league. He had 15 points and 7 rebounds. But what did y'all see from Alabama in strictly this game?
Can't shoot the three. We miss everything we took, basically. We got out physical. Tui Smith made us look like a bunch of toddlers in the paint. Matthews, whatever he is on, because he is extremely strong. Every single time, it looked like Charles Bediaka was just getting thrown out of bounds or something. No clown, he cannot make a three to save his life. And obviously you'll see that as we go forward into the next game we talked about. But I don't know what our problem is now. We used to be so efficient from three, and now we can't hit the broadside of a barn. And that's our main issue.
Yeah. Alabama is living and dying by a 3-pointer. And you see that in this game, they almost lost by it. And they, lost by it in the Oklahoma game. Javon Quinterly really picked up the slack from the lack of scoring from the starting guards, Mark Sears and Jaden Bradley. Thought that was good to see. He's kind of turning into that guy we saw win the tournament MVP, the SEC tournament MVP. Really, we kind of really need that with these guys lacking. Also, like to talk about Nick Pringle. He came into this game because Charles Bediaka got in foul trouble early, and he gave us really good minutes. I don't understand why he doesn't get more playing time. It needs to be a consistent thing. Honestly, I think he should be starting over Charles Bediaka. That's just me. But Alabama was really lucky to get out of this with a win, the Mississippi State game.
Yeah, 100%. Alabama remains undefeated in SEC play, but falls to the Oklahoma Sooners in Norman in the Big 12 SEC Challenge, with the SEC losing that challenge 7-3. But in this game, Alabama scores 3 more points than they did in the Mississippi State game, but, you know, wasn't able to find a win because the defense fell apart. Oklahoma looked, you know, absolutely outstanding in this game. They shot 57% from the field and 69% from three. And Oklahoma played a perfect game, and Alabama just got manhandled physically, just like Nathan said about the Mississippi State game. they just did not look like they belonged, you know, when it comes to in the paint. And you know, the 3-point struggles continued. Alabama goes 6 of 22. It's just, what does Alabama need to do, especially defensively, to be able to hang with these teams even when their 3-pointers aren't going down?
Can we just get like a massive center like Zachy that just stands in the paint? Obviously, that's what we need, because watching this game, it was the same thing from the Mississippi State game, where Tanner Gross just basically threw us around, and Charles Badiako, being the stick he is, doesn't know what's going on. No, Clowney's not big enough to defend it. He's too small. He got pushed around. There was not one guy on our team that could withstand his strength. We got out physical. They hustled more than we did. They shot, made everything. We could hit nothing. We shot 37% from the field as a team. Literally one of the worst games I've seen all season. Not to mention, we turned the ball over 13 times, and Brandon Miller struggled. Mark Sears struggled. We don't have people who want to come out there and make plays for the team. They basically looked like they were taking a nap the whole time they were playing.
I turned off the game at halftime, honestly. I mean, I kept it with it, obviously, towards the end, just to see what was going on. But Oklahoma just couldn't miss in the first half. They looked unstoppable. I don't know where this came from. Oklahoma has been lackluster all year. It was just surprising to me. And like I said, Alabama just can't defend the paint. And if they can't fix that, they're going to struggle in the tournament. If they face somebody like Zach Edey, he'll destroy us. He'll go up for 38 points like he did on last Saturday. I mean, he'll just destroy us.
Yeah.
But the bright spots of this game were Javon Quinterly and Rylan Griffin off the bench. That was a good thing to see with both those guys. Really shows how deep this Alabama team is. But they kind of got an easy week coming up. Hopefully they were able to bounce back and just get that mojo that they had before this game.
Before we move on, one name I'm going to mention, Alex, Dom Welch. there's a moment coming out of second half where we had started to run. He gets a wide open layup and he misses, kills all our momentum, and we did not see anything from that point on. That layup would have put us within 10 or maybe single digits, which would have been huge for our confidence. Instead, he misses a wide open layup. He consistently doesn't do anything for this team. He has no defense. His offense is lackluster. Why is he with this team?
He's getting more minutes than Nick Pringle, which I think is a crime. I don't understand how he Nate Oates has given him all those minutes. I really don't.
Yeah. Moving on, talking about the other State of Alabama team, talking about the Auburn Tigers. Two really struggle-filled games. First with the A&M game on Wednesday. Texas A&M and Buzz Williams has Bruce Pearl and Auburn's number. They have had that number ever since Buzz Williams became the coach for the Aggies. And it was evident in this game as the 28-game home winning streak comes to a close with Tyrese Radford basically ending it himself. Radford had 30 points and 9 rebounds. And none of Tyrese Radford's shots I couldn't hit. You couldn't hit, Nathan. Alex, you couldn't hit. Everyone, it was just straight line drive, layup after layup after layup. And he would just do it every single time. And Auburn was never able to come back in this game due to their just open lanes on defense. We have got to figure out how to guard a guard. And every one of our losses, a point guard or shooting guard for the other team has gone for 26 or more points. And Georgia, it was Terry Roberts. Against USC, it was Boogie Ellis. Against Memphis, it was Kendrick Davis. Against Texas A&M, it was Tyrese Stratford. And we'll talk about the West Virginia game here in just a minute, but it was Eric Stevenson. Every single one of the game, they've gone for 26 or more points. That's the problem. We can't defend good guards. And that's so odd to me, especially considering the two guys we have at the shooting guard position in Zeb Jasper and Katie Johnson, both who are supposed to be elite on-ball perimeter defenders, and we have not seen that at all from either one of them. And Wendell Green has been a much better defender than he was last season, but in those games, we just have not seen that. There's becoming a major issue not in the paint. The issue has not been in the paint for Auburn, and it has not been that way all season. But in the backcourt and in on with the guards and on the perimeter, there has become a major issue offensively and defensively that Auburn has got to find a way to get around.
You know, watching this game, you have home court advantage. You have a packed house. It's one of those games where I expected Auburn to just have all the momentum consistently, them to come out, punch Texas A&M in the mouth, come out with a really, really good SEC win, and Texas A&M showed up and said, not so fast.
Yeah.
Auburn, you know, they've been better recently. They've been better shooting-wise. Yeah. And you come into this game, and you shoot 18% from three. You cannot hit anything. Your bright spots, Janiah Broome had 7 blocks. I don't remember the last time I saw that. He had 16 points. Wendell Green had 16 points. But outside of them, you had no bench production. That's the closest person. KD Johnson had 5 off the bench. Dylan Carwell, he had 0. You got to have bench production if you want to win these SEC games like this, especially against a good coach team in Texas A&M. Texas A&M is a really, really physical team. They can get to the basket. They know how to score the ball. And if you do not cut them off in the paint, then they will make you pay for it.
Yeah, I think the way to fix this bench problem for Auburn is to just move Alan Flanagan back to that slot. He's playing really well there until Chris Moore got injured. I think swapping him and Chris Moore back out will give that spark off the bench the Tigers need. Yeah. But also, I mean, what's the point of Zeb Jasper if he's not going to play defense? He doesn't do offense. Yeah. I'm being serious. Like, why does he play? He doesn't provide anything.
If you look at the offensive production from Zeb Jasper, it is next to zero. He hits a three every once in a while, and it's one a game, if that. And it's just Auburn in the past, if you go back and look at Bruce Pearl teams of the past, especially when you talk about the Final Four season, who was the two guard? It was Bryce Brown. The offensive production between him and Zeb Jasper is astonishing. It's unbelievable. Bryce Brown averaged almost 20 points a game and averaged about 5 threes a game. Zeb Jasper's not coming anywhere close to that. And that's the problem with this team. And just like you said, Alex, he hasn't been the elite defender that he was last season. So what does Auburn do? Because you can't go to KD Johnson. That's your next two guard. You can't do that. That makes it even worse. KD Johnson is not only smaller, but he's struggling more offensively, and he's less experienced than Zep. I don't know what you do at that two guard spot. Auburn's got to find a way around that, and I think it's going to have to come through the front court. It's got to come through guys like Janiah Broome and Jalen Williams, and just like we've mentioned all season long, if Wendell Green plays good, Auburn's going to play pretty good. If Wendell Green plays bad, Auburn's going to play pretty bad. If Wendell Green plays average, and Auburn's going to play kind of average. And again, that's evident in every single game that Auburn has played. But moving on to talking about this West Virginia game, again, Auburn and Alabama both losing their SEC Big 12 Challenge game this year. Auburn goes to Morgantown, gets down by 16 at halftime to West Virginia, and is able to claw back, get within one, and have a shot at the buzzer to tie it. But in this game, I think it was a tale of two different halves. You didn't see any effort in any desire for Auburn in the first half, but in the second half you saw plays that we were designing plays for Jalen Williams to get the ball, we were designing plays for Janiah Broome to get the ball, and it was working. And I don't know why we ever go away from those two are the offenses are going to run through those two. Obviously Wendell Green is point guard number one. He's the guy that if he plays bad, we're going to play bad. But the offense needs to run through the two guys at the front court, just like it did last year in Jabari and Walker. So what did y'all see from Auburn in this game?
To start, any team that can come back down 16 and really force the home team to, panic a little bit, that's a good team. Because certainly Alabama can do it. We cannot do it on the road versus Oklahoma. And watching this game, y'all had so many opportunities to take the lead, to cut runs from West Virginia. Y'all played really good defense, and then you go back down the offensive end and make a stupid mistake, take a dumb shot, and it would give them a fast break opportunity, and they made you pay every single time. you're not going to win the game giving up 31. You gave it 31 to Stevenson. He shot lights out. It seems like unbelievable. It seems like every time he touched the ball, he was shooting it and making it. Yeah. I mean, he was taking deep threes too. Yeah. So sometimes people were just better. Sometimes teams are just better. But in this moment, Auburn played good enough to win, but they didn't close out. And that's their problem. They don't close out these games, and it affects the win-loss column.
Yeah, they don't finish out these games because they don't have that guy. We've mentioned it since the beginning of the season. We've been waiting for that person to solidify themselves as that guy like that in Jabari Smith last year. We thought it was Wendell Green Jr., but he's kind of been inconsistent lately. It's just, I don't think that guy's on the roster this year for Auburn. I think that's the reason that you're just not going to do well in the tournament.
Yeah. The problem has been, just like you said, Alex, not being able to find that guy. And I think it's going to have to be one of the two guys in the front court. It's going to have to be Janai or it's going to have to be Jalen. But it's harder. It's going to get harder and harder to get those guys the ball in good situations with the flex cut action that Auburn likes to run because of the way Texas A&M defended it. They allowed Jalen to only have five shots. The way Texas A&M fronted Janai Broome, teams are going to be more physical with you in the front court. You've got to make shots in the back court. But Nathan, what do you got for us from the NFL this past weekend on Championship Sunday?
Yeah, starting off, we got the Eagles versus 49ers. Eagles end up winning 31-7 to return to the Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts, he didn't have that impressive of a game, but he really didn't have to. 49ers quarterback Brock Purdy went out with an injury early. It just hindered the 49ers offense. Christian McCaffrey did everything he could, scored the only touchdown for him. Other than that, it's kind of hard because their playmakers didn't have someone that was starting to him. Josh Johnson looked like he was out of place. He looked like he didn't have any reps throughout the season. He just generally looked lost. There was a point right before halftime where they got the ball back after the Eagles had scored, and you know, he just fumbled the snap, and that put the Eagles in a position to go ahead and go at 21-7 entering halftime. And it never felt like the 49ers were ever going to have momentum in this game. Yeah. The only time you can even come close is when they had tied the game up 7-7 when Chris McCaffrey ran the touchdown in. And all after that, it was just silence from that team. And personally, I feel bad for 49ers fans because they've went through so many quarterbacks this season. And does have something like that happen in this big of a game is it's depressing, to be honest. But once again, the Eagles end up moving forward, and it's going to be a great matchup in the Super Bowl. What did y'all see from this game?
Yeah, it was just sad to see how the 49er season ended with Brock Purdy going down. I was really hoping for a more competitive game, and I really think we would have been in store for one, but Purdy just got injured. The 49ers defense didn't really play well. I mean, they needed to get a takeaway and just couldn't force one. And they just kept getting turnover after turnover, penalty after penalty, and it just kind of extended drives for the Philadelphia Eagles. I think the Eagles may have had the easiest path to the Super Bowl I've ever seen. I mean, they played the Giants, and then they played the 49ers, who lost the quarterback in the first quarter. I mean, I don't know how easy you can get of making it to the Super Bowl.
That is very true. But just like y'all said, it's very unfortunate the way that this game kind of unfolded for the 49ers. You hate to see a season end like that, especially a season that they had so much success in. You always give props to the Philadelphia Eagles, who they played a really, really good football game. But just like you mentioned, Alex, this is going to be an interesting Super Bowl because of the easy track that the Eagles have had compared to what the Chiefs have had to go through. But I'm excited about it. Not next Sunday, but the next.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they had a really, really easy regular season too. And that's not saying like they didn't play any good teams. They played the Cowboys. They, of course, played their divisional rivals. But at the time, you had a Cowboys team, Cooper Rush, that came in. The Giants, probably one of their biggest opponents, but obviously that team has holes in it. So you really question the strength of this Eagles team. And, you know, once you watch the Super Bowl, we will know their worth. So moving on to talk about the opponent in the Super Bowl, the Chiefs ended up beating the Bengals 23-20. This game was so back and forth. Two great quarterbacks, Patrick Mahomes, playing through a really bad ankle injury. And it was obviously present when he was throwing the ball. The Bengals defense continued to prove that they're really, really good, and they've been underrated this whole season. And, you know, the Bengals had the ball with 2 minutes left. They had the chance to go down and drive and score the game-winning field goal or touchdown. But Kansas City ended up forcing a punt. Of course, great return by Sky Moore. And then Patrick Mahomes, of course, takes care of the rest and gets a little help from a late hit out-of-bounds penalty that put him in field goal range. But watching this game, there were definitely points where it was questionable. It was a questionable red game. The Chiefs had gotten an extra down just because they had stopped a play. And, you know, you kind of wonder if the Chiefs had gotten the first down of that play, would they have, you know, redone it? I don't know what you saw, Gray, but this was a little sketchy.
Yeah, it was kind of sketchy watching it. It was like I didn't really know what to think immediately, but when they got the extra down, I was just, you're absolutely right. It was a little sketchy, but you give props to, I want to give immediate special props to Chris Jones. I think that dude should win Defensive Player of the Year this year. He has had the best season of his career. The sack to force the, on the third down to force the punt, basically won the game, in my opinion. Once he made that sack and the Sky Moore return, it was like, okay, yeah, this is over. Don't know how the Chiefs are going to get 20 more yards to get this into field goal range, but you knew they were going to do it, especially with Patrick Mahomes. But it was an interesting game. It was a classic game. Of course, it, just like for the 49ers, you hate to see the Bengals season in this way, the way that they played down the stretch, you know, going to Buffalo, winning that game, and then coming here, making this such a good game. You hate to see it for the Bengals, but again, excited about the Chiefs in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I talked about all these questionable calls. I mean, another questionable calls, but you just can't blame the rest of your loss if you're a Bengals fan. Right. I mean, they had ample opportunities to win that game. They had the ball with under 2 minutes left to go, and their offensive line just decided they weren't going to block anymore and let Joe Burrow get sacked. Can't blame Joseph Osai, the guy who got the late hit on Patrick Mahomes, for that loss either. I mean, he played great that entire game and just made one mistake. Just one. And I know it was the killer mistake, but like I said, they had ample opportunities to win that game. And Jermaine Pratt's outburst in the tunnel after the game, the Bengals linebacker, was so uncalled for. Yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous. A terrible teammate. I can't imagine having him on my team. I mean, that's just atrocious.
Yeah.
On the other flip side, you had B.J. Hill, a defensive lineman for the Bengals, stand by Joseph Osai during his postgame interview and just say, you know, that wasn't his fault. You know, we had chances to win this game, we just didn't. And I really thought that was just a great thing for him to do with Osai being so emotional. And CBS's coverage of Osai crying on the sideline, I just think that's so insensitive. They need to give that guy a break. I mean, it was just one mistake. It was just so bad. Like I said, the Bengals' poor offensive line really came back to bite him in that. I mean, and Chris Jones absolutely destroyed him that entire game.
Okay.
And the Bengals' defense, I mean, last week we were talking about how good they were, and then this week they only get 2 sacks and 5 QB hits on a Mahomes with like one good leg. How do you do that? You got to have more than that.
Yeah, I will say probably the most game-changing penalty was when Joe Burrow had the intentional grounding call. I think that, like, killed the whole momentum for that last drive for them. And obviously the Chris Jones sack after that basically killed the drive. But, you know, you watch the Bengals this whole season and what they've been able to do. They had the playmakers. They had the quarterback. And the only thing that it seems like they're really missing now is that offensive line. So going into this offseason, I think that's the main thing they need to improve on. Obviously, there's a few holes in the defense. You mentioned how they weren't able to get to Mahomes a lot. I really think that just goes back to the Chiefs having a really, really, really good offensive line.
complete opposite of the Bengals.
Exactly. And that's just the one thing they need to improve on, because they have their guys. T. Higgins has been great. Jamar Chase is obviously everywhere. Hayden Hurst is the best tight end you can ask for if you're a Bengals fan. So just moving forward, you just kind of improve that offensive line, and in a few years, I wouldn't be surprised to see the Bengals back in the Super Bowl and maybe win it.
Most definitely. All right, that's all time we have for today. Thank you for listening to Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.